Welcome to Voices from the Valley, a podcast of the Community Foundation for the Fox Valley Region. I'm Amy Spreeman. Did you know that drug and alcohol-related deaths in Wisconsin have tripled over the last 15 years? In this Part 1 episode titled Hope for Addiction Recovery, we are asking how big of a problem is addiction in our area, what's being done to help, and what are some of the barriers to finding that help people need? We are well familiar with Wisconsin's reputation for being the drunkest state in the nation, where we have 1.3 times higher alcohol consumption rates than the national average. That's according to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Even the Wall Street Journal a few years ago noted these numbers and wrote an article about the top 50 drunkest counties in the United States. Can you guess how many of those counties are in Wisconsin? There are four just in our area. Of the 50 drunkest counties, number 24 is Winnebago County, number 18 is Brown County, and numbers 1 and 2, right here in the Fox Cities, number 2 is Calumet, and the number 1 drunkest county in Wisconsin is Outagamie. Now that's for alcohol, but what about drug use? Well, Wisconsin ranks 24th in the number of drug deaths in the U.S., and just in Winnebago County alone, deaths from drug overdoses have more than doubled over the past 2 years, with many other Wisconsin counties reporting similar significant increases. One of our nonprofit partners, Apricity, provides those impacted by substance abuse disorders a full spectrum of care, including treatment, employment, and support. And recently, Apricity shared some numbers with us that we'd like to share with you now. They gathered statistics for 5 counties in the Fox Valley region: Outagamie, Winnebago, Calumet, Wapaka, and Shawano. And here's what they found. In 2022, the total population was estimated at nearly 507,000 people. 16% of them said they struggled with substance abuse, but only 6% of those struggling received treatment. That leaves 94% who don't receive treatment. It's about 78,000 people whose families and friends are also impacted. With this reality in mind, we want to share some resources on our website in the show notes for this episode for anyone struggling with drug or alcohol addiction, or anyone interested in supporting the nonprofits who are working hard to make recovery possible, many of which have received generous support from the Community Foundation's donors. We will highlight some of them. Up first, we take you to the new Drop-In Recovery Community Center in downtown Wapaka, where Carolyn DeRosier and I saw how the community has come together to provide a safe space for anyone struggling with addiction who maybe just needs a smile, a kind ear, or simply a place to sit, have a cup of coffee, and begin to heal. We are here in Wapaka, Wisconsin, a city of about 6,500 residents where something truly remarkable is happening in the recovery community. The sounds you're going to hear are from the Wapaka Recovery Drop-In Center, where community members can stop in for everything from a cup of coffee to resources to peer support to art, poetry, and music.
The center is a collaboration between Project Wishope, Impact Wisconsin, and the Wapaka Area Recovery Coalition, one of many ways the Wapaka community has come together over the last couple of years to provide increased community support and pathways to recovery for individuals struggling with addiction.
Yeah, Carolyn and I are here with Michael Hall, Executive Director of Impact Wisconsin. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. And also joining us is Justine Levitt of Project Wishope, and we're going to learn more about how Wapaka leaders are building resiliency from the bottom up. Michael and Justine, again, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Well, we'd love to start with just inviting you each to share a bit about yourselves, your background, and how you ended up doing the work that you're doing now.
So yeah, I got into the work that we're doing here now just actually kind of out of happenstance. Most of my career I spent in the automotive industry and started getting into some bivocational ministry, and I found a really awesome nonprofit here in Wapaka called Foundations for Living, and that kind of just sparked a desire in me to get into the nonprofit world. And so did that, went through the NPLI Leadership Forum through the Community Foundation, and just really got the bug to do this. And as a person with with lived experience and being involved in the nonprofit community saw sort of a cost opportunity, right? There was a lot of things going on in WPACA, but there wasn't a lot geared towards recovery. And so we really wanted to focus in the areas of substance use disorder and mental health concerns. And this sort of collaboration between us and WISHOPE and in other areas, Mission of Hope, has just been really remarkable to see the things that are happening in our community. And it's just great to be along for the ride.
And Justine, how about you? I know your kids are having some fun in the background, so we love that here. That's part of your whole part of recovery, too, is inviting people's kids to come.
Yes, it is. I pride myself on letting other individuals know that just because you don't have a babysitter doesn't mean that you can't recover. I've brought my children to every single meeting that I've come to. It was August 19th of 2021. I was arrested with my son in the vehicle. I had a lot of drugs and a stolen gun on me. And at that point, I thought that my life was done and over with. I had already lost my children, and I was court ordered to do the adult treatment court program, and that program saved my life. I finished the treatment court program July 19th, 2023. And on that day, Judge Vicki Klusman married my husband and I. It was a day for the whole recovery community to come together. We had the drug court coordinator, probation and parole, chief of police, recovering addicts. It was a beautiful day. When I started the drug court treatment program, I started volunteering my time at WISHOPE and at Foundations for Living. I've been volunteering for a year and a half, almost 2 years now, and it's a blessing to be where I'm at now, to be giving back to a community that so freely gave to me and saved my life and my children's lives. It's beautiful. So any way that I can give back, I'm going to.
It was a truly remarkable thing to watch, Justine, because I was there her first day when she came into treatment court, and she was pretty shaken. And I think what I heard her say was, there is just no way that I can do this. And I remember the treatment court judge at the time saying, it's a lot, but you can get through it. And she didn't just get through it. She became kind of the catalyst for a lot of the things happening in the recovery community, just through her growth in treatment court and just making everyone feel welcome and just an all-inclusive environment.
So help us understand, what does the problem of addiction and substance use look like here in the WPACA area, and why is recovery support needed here in WPACA?
There really was not a lot of resources, and this is typical in rural communities, not necessarily because they don't realize that addiction is there and they don't realize that there's a problem, but they just don't really know what the solutions are. And I think as we started doing the work in this community, seeing the level of addiction, seeing the number of overdose deaths that were happening, we recognized something was missing. And just through some collaboration with other nonprofits and other leaders, we kind of developed this recovery ecosystem, which includes a lot of things like drop-in centers and treatment court and sober living and just having peer support and clinical services, all really needed to be in place in order to address this great need of substance use disorder in these rural areas.
Yeah, and we're here in the drop-in center, and people can't see it because this is a podcast. Can you explain a little bit about this environment? What happens here, and what kind of treatment programs do you have here?
So we're actually really busy. We have tons of programming going on. We recently brought in a bar for it to be a cafe. Serenity Cafe is what we're going to go with. Being able to have coffee available for people, a warm place for people to come in. Programming is there's so much here right now. We've got recovery yoga, just for women on one day, and then co-ed on another day. We have recovery dharma. We've got the recovery crew that comes in. We have a 12-step meeting here almost every day, if not two times a day. So there's lots of opportunities for people to come and, you know, come and hang out or come and get services, come and enjoy your time or just stay warm and have a cup of coffee. You know, we're here. The doors are open for people to come and hang out rather than going out on the streets and using.
And people can't see this, but there's some beautiful art on the wall. There's a stage here. So it sounds like you also have some opportunities for people to express themselves and enjoy art and music.
Yep, absolutely. We pride ourselves on that. We would like people to continue. We have 3 months of poetry, art, and music set up, and it's been requested to continue going on after those 3 months. So it's beautiful.
I think kind of at the genesis of the whole thing and having these conversations with WIS Hope and some of the others in the recovery community was to create a space where it wasn't just recovery folks, right? It was to create a space where the general community could come in and we could be doing things shoulder to shoulder, enjoying music, enjoying poetry, enjoying art. And that was just a way to really be sort of a catalyst to joining our recovery community with the community at large, because together we can do a lot more than we can staying separate kind of as the norm would be. So it's just been really great to see having, and we have had quite a number of just community members, having our law enforcement here feeling welcome, having people from the probation department here just feeling welcome and doing life alongside those of us in the recovery community.
Mm. It sounds like that's kind of what happened with your wedding. That's a huge milestone in someone's life. And you had all kinds of folks there to support you through that.
Yes, it was beautiful.
So I know Impact Wisconsin received a $15,000 grant from our Community Vision Fund within the Community Foundation to help with the drop-in center. Can you tell us about how you were able to use that grant?
Yeah. So it was critical for us in order to be able to get a lot of the equipment that's needed. Obviously, cafe equipment is not cheap. And, it was also kind of one of those things that spurred on this collaboration with WIS Hope was instead of getting another space and opening another, sort of business is, hey, let's collaborate together. You guys have a really good name in the community. People know where it is. Let's take the Ezra Project and move that in there, share the space and really just be able to bring community together in a sustainable and equitable way. And so, but without that grant, certainly we would not have the what we have now with this, with the Ezra Project, as well as that funding going towards opening the first women's recovery residence in our community.
Yeah. I love how you talk about the ecosystem. And it appears that Waupaca County is a very special and unique place for that to happen and for that to develop. Can you just talk a little bit about some of the other community initiatives that are part of this?
Yeah. So the first one was a dwelling initiative, and that was to provide a safe home for those that are early in recovery to stay. So again, that kind of goes back to some of this funding as well. We were able to get our first women's house open. We realized the need on June 15th. We opened the home, and on June 17th, it was full, and we've had a waiting list kind of ever since. And then we just opened the Lotus House in a neighboring town in Waiawiga for men. So we just kind of finding there really is this really big need for safe and affordable housing for those in the recovery community. And then there's also clinical. So I'm also an employee of Core Treatment Services, which is a treatment center based in Manitowoc. We opened a outpatient facility here in Waupaca in September, where we provide one-on-one. We also provide IOP, which is intensive outpatient groups, to folks in treatment court and just folks in the recovery community that need that clinical support. Also, there's peer support that we started back in January of this year, just being able to provide folks to go into the jail and work with those that are coming out. Folks that can be here at the drop-in center, they have now been educated in a way to work with our clients in the recovery community to ensure that they are getting as much of a wraparound. We call it our safety net, right? Our recovery community safety net. So all of these pieces of the recovery ecosystem that are there are necessary in order to avoid people falling through the cracks. And I think Justine was critical in opening the women's house. She's been here this whole ride since we started doing peer support training way back in January of last year. It's really been a collaborative effort, and we really need everyone at the table if we're going to make this a success, especially in a rural community.
I agree. Everything that he says, it's super critical. You know, we see people that don't have housing and they go back out to what they know, you know, so it's hard, you know, when we see these people and we're working alongside them all day, every day, you know, and then all of a sudden they're gone. It's heartbreaking for us, you know, but we just got to keep going and keep pushing through every day, you know, because there's always going to be another one, you know, they're always going to need help.
So it sounds like you've done a really great job of that whole continuum from someone maybe being in a treatment program to being able to have a supportive place to live to, oh, there's a place I can go hang out and go see poetry and meet people who can support me. I mean, I can just see how that really makes a huge difference for people. So we know there's a lot of stigma around substance use, substance misuse. Why do you think that is? Where does that stigma come from? And what impact does stigma have on people in Waupaca?
I mean, it's a narrative, right? It's, you know, it's an ontological issue. And so it's the adage, the cliche is, you know, once an addict, always an addict. And there's some clinical truth in that. We never really leave the disease behind us. However, the truth is recovery is possible, and recovery isn't black and white, whether someone stays sober for 10 years and that's considered success. We really take more of a holistic approach to fighting stigma, which is, what does their life look like? What are they doing day to day? Where are they going? Who are they hanging out with? What services can we provide to them to ensure that when the time comes that we break that stigma by saying, listen, recovery is possible. I mean, I can't think of a more obvious example than Justine. I mean, just watching her come into treatment court, watching her grow, watching her get involved in the community and saying, it's not okay. This is not true. We can and do recover. Foundations for Living has been a part of that before we even knew what this was. And so it's been a community that's come together to say, this is not how we talk about people who want to get well. And so that's been our primary objective at Ending Stigma, is saying, these are our community members. People do recover and they do thrive. We just need to give them the opportunity and the benefit of the doubt to get started.
Yeah, a lot of opportunity to do that too here.
There is. There's a lot of opportunity for that. And being such a small community, we all know each other, you know, if we're not related, you know, so it's to see, you know, your friends and your family just continuously go downhill. It's hard, you know, so it's where we all get together and we all work hard. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to help an addict.
Yeah. And you know, we have probably a lot of listeners right now who don't know what it's like to be an addict or to be in recovery. And if there was one thing that you would want our listeners to know about that, what would it be?
I mean, for me personally, is this, when someone goes into the hospital with a low blood sugar, they're diabetic, it's something that happens, right? And they come into the ER and they're in a critical condition. We give them glucose, right? We help them get their blood sugar stabilized. And then we ensure that someone talks to them about their insulin and how that's used to treat the condition that they have. Addiction is the only disease where we punish people for being sick. So for example, someone who's experiencing an issue with opiates, which we all know is a very big crisis right now, were to have a problem and end up overdosing, oftentimes our medical system will pull their prescriptions and say, no, we're not going to let you have that. We're not going to continue care for you. So the stigma is really great in those environments where it's just really difficult to get people care. But again, it's the only disease that we deal with on a daily basis, that we treat it as a moral problem and a moral blight versus what it actually truly is, which is substance use disorder. That is a disease, not a choice.
Justine, how about you? Is there something that you would like our listeners to know about what this is like, this journey in recovery?
This doesn't have to be a way of life for somebody. Living proof is possible.
Yeah, you are living proof. Thank you.
As you think about the future of recovery community in Wapaka, what do you hope for or envision?
Me personally is to see that full social services net come around anyone who's suffering from substance use disorder, from Theta, who has been an amazing partner in all of this, to the treatment centers like CORE and WISHOPE, who have also been an amazing part of this. What we really hope to see is our county and our community to step up and say, we are not going to let anyone fall through the cracks. So we're going to move heaven and earth to ensure that we have the funding and the resources to be available to those in our community that are struggling, to provide for them and to find a way to make a way forward for completely finishing off that tapestry of social network to keep someone afloat.
I agree with everything Michael said. I think for me, we do have outpatient treatment now. For me, it would be nice for us to see inpatient treatment nearby. It would be nice to see like a clean needle exchange, Narcan, a vending machine, those things, you know. If we can't save their life by getting them in, maybe we can save their life by giving them Narcan. You know, I try and hand out as much as I possibly can here, you know, but it's hard, you know. It's hard to just, you know where to send the Narcan, you know, and then you've got the addicts that don't want to go into probation and parole and get Narcan or go into the sheriff's department, you know, so it's difficult. It's something that we've touched base on it before, you know, but that's what it looks like for me is, you know, some inpatient treatment would be nice. And like I said, a clean needle exchange, a Narcan vending machine, those stuff, all those things that would help save lives.
Yeah, and saving lives, it takes these very important resources from the community. Can you let our listeners know what they can do to help recovery efforts in Waupaca or in their home community, wherever they're listening from?
Yeah, so here locally, we have a Waupaca Area Recovery Coalition. Their website is www.waupacarc.org, and they kind of are the overarching sort of folks that are going to be championing some of these new programs and really getting out in front of things. Impact Wisconsin, we do recovery residences, we do peer support. So that's just impactwi.org. There's Project Wishope, who again is supporting this recovery drop-in center. Their website is wishope.org, W-I-S-H-O-P.org. And then where we're kind of looking at doing some crisis intervention and potentially opening treatment would be at Mission of Hope in New London. And that's just mohwi.org.
And we're also going to put all of these links on our website, including some other community links. If you're not in the Waupaca area, you can go to our website in our show notes today and check those out.
If someone wanted to come check out the drop-in center, what are the hours that they can come?
Right now, we're open 8 to 5:30 Monday through Sunday, every day.
That's amazing. Wow. And then is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you would want people to know about? Michael, I know you had maybe had some numbers that you could share, but just want to make sure you have a chance to include anything else we didn't ask about.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about ending stigma and we talk about that social net and we talk about what does it look like here versus other places. So if we look at Waupaca County as far as number of residents per mental health providers, so that's substance use disorder counselors, people that are higher level therapy, we have 1,060 residents to every one mental health provider in our community, where we look to the north and we see that that number is closer to 570 per resident, or Stevens Point, Portage County, where that's 830 to 1. So I think those are some of the important things we have to think about. Are we doing enough? The need is here. How can we help to promote change and to make those numbers look different by next year?
Well, thank you both for everything that you're doing here in the community and for joining us on the podcast. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We will be right back.
What matters most to you and why? At the Community Foundation for the Fox Valley Region, we know you care about the causes and issues that impact your life and the lives of your neighbors. Maybe it's education or affordable housing or our great outdoors. There are so many ways you can impact lives and make the Fox Valley an even better place to live for all. Let us know what matters to you. Learn more at cffoxvalley.org/matters. Together, we flourish.
The Community Foundation for the Fox Valley Region works to strengthen our community today and for generations to come by helping people, businesses, and organizations make a difference in the lives of all. Get in the loop. Stay informed about what's happening in the Fox Valley through the Community Foundation. Our blog shares stories of impact about the arts, education, community improvement, healthcare, human services, and the environment. Sign up at cffoxvalley.org/loop. See how giving matters.
We are back, and as we learn more about the landscape of addiction in the Fox Valley region, we're wondering, how does addiction affect the human brain? And could addiction be a physiological illness rather than a lack of self-control, as some might believe? Carolyn DeRosier sat down with a behavioral health advisor about how we as family members and friends can encourage our loved ones along their journey to recovery. Here's Carolyn's report.
According to a Kaiser Family Foundation poll from last year, two-thirds of Americans said either they or a family member have been addicted to alcohol or drugs, which means, sadly, addiction is all too common. Here to help us understand more about addiction and recovery is Jesse Heffernan, the Region 5 Behavioral Health Advisor for SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Jesse is also a certified recovery coach trainer and has been working in the fields of addiction and mental health for 20 years. Welcome to the podcast, Jesse.
Hi, Carolyn. Good to be here.
Can you share a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you ended up doing the work you're doing now?
It's great to be on this. So a little bit about my background. I'm a person in long-term, what I like to call self-directed recovery. You know, that includes, you know, addressing my own substance use and misuse and going through treatment, but then also addressing like what the underlying factors were with mental health, with trauma and all those different things. So it's been a lot of that work since I got into recovery. You know, it was shared with me, like, you got to do the internal work in order to do like external stuff to help other people. So work on your, like, you know, that cliche, like, you got to put your own mask on first before you try to help anyone else. And I think that's really what's been a large part of my personal recovery, is trying to always remember that, is to put my own mask on first. And so, you know, it's been a series of things that kind of got me to where I am. Early in my recovery, I got involved with different types of like volunteer service work within different recovery fellowships. And that's where I learned kind of like some of the nonprofit models and board structures, and, you know, even being able to put together recovery events and budgets and venues and all that stuff. And so it kind of started all with those, and then doing, you know, like recovery meetings inside jails and prisons, and doing some youth related meetings. And then eventually kind of got to this spot where with SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, a friend of mine had thrown my hat in the ring for this regional job. So Region 5 is Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. And SAMHSA breaks up the country into 10 regions. And our office is a mighty office of two people covering six states.
Let's talk about the Fox Valley region. Help us understand the landscape of addiction in the Fox Valley region. How big of a problem is it? And like, how is our region doing in terms of treatment services?
Our region is pretty close to, like, when we think about like other areas our size, like, you know, the 90 to 150,000, there's like a mix of like suburban and rural. Alcohol, you know, being one of the huge key factors that impacts what's going on here in the Fox Valley. And you know, that's kind of what's going on. But we also have our share significantly at times of with opioids, fentanyl and meth, and of course, xylazine. I've had the chance to work and connect with some of the folks at Vibrant Health and really hear about their experiences. And I think that's where I get most of my information from now about this area and beyond. And, you know, they're just seeing these things happen continuously, right? And people needing access to care. So I would say, like, the region, when it comes to recovery, has certainly expanded. We have recovery community organizations. We have one of the longest running community programs, Apricity, which used to be STEP. I mean, they've been around for 40 years. I think they've been trailblazers when it comes to working with people in recovery. I don't know of any program yet across the country that can boast doing what they have done for as long as they've done. And they continue to be innovative in their approaches and their strategy of combining their recovery services with their employment services, with their treatment services. Again, like, I think they're on the forefront of a lot of leadership when it comes to what's being done here in the Fox Valley. And I have a lot of faith in those very innovative programs and strategies and approaches. And I see them replicated in some areas. But again, there's just, I think, some really cool deep roots here that not everyone knows is here.
Mm-hmm. And you're helping us understand that it's a lot of points of entry or types of services or support that someone might want to utilize. It's not just, you know, people might be thinking of that treatment to get someone, quote unquote, clean, but really there's so much more than that. And you're seeing a lot of that happening in our region.
Yeah. And we're, you know, and SAMHSA just recently put out their opioid misuse guide, and they put out another one around harm reduction. And so even we're seeing, like, you know, harm reduction hasn't always been talked about. And there's been organizations that have been doing the harm reduction model, you know, for 30 years, you know, in Chicago is, you know, started a lot of that. But again, like, we're not just talking about like risk reduction, but like harm reduction, right? And so being able to offer folks not just like clean supplies, but also then like knowing that comes with like what other risk factors are in their life that you can mitigate, so that like maybe one of the things that are like exacerbating use, you know, to some degree, and can you work on those things? And so, you know, we've got like 8 dimensions of wellness that we look at. And so it is more than just the substance use or misuse itself. Looking at a person holistically is what I think has been a great approach, and the multiple pathways that it requires.
Mm-hmm. We know that there's still a lot of stigma around substance use Why do you think that is, especially knowing that what we mentioned earlier, two-thirds of people have themselves been addicted or have a family who's been addicted, that stigma is still there. So why do you think that is, and you know, what impact does the stigma have on people?
I guess it is starting to change a little bit, right? Like if someone's family member goes to treatment, the community doesn't surround them and say, like, how can we get you food and casseroles for the next week, right? Or the next 28 days. But little small pieces of that have opened up, right? And it is because of that shame that comes with substance use disorder, because people still tend to, you know, connect it to some kind of failing. Something's wrong with them. Something's wrong with their family. Same thing with mental health. But we've seen like so many mental health campaigns, and I think mental health advocacy, if you will, is like 5-10 years ahead in some senses, just because of the way that it began. It was more open in that sense. But we've seen great strides on all ways. And, you know, I'll just continue to pump up SAMHSA. You know, they've been celebrating Recovery Month and Recovery Days for years, right? They've held on to that, and they lift up, you know, the organizations that are doing these things and help promote these ideas and grant funding for recovery-focused organizations. In some states that I've worked with, like really trying to build on that awareness. And I think that's been some of the most helpful stuff, right? Is when people appropriately share their stories in that context, and then also help educate communities that it's not just like this moral failing kind of a thing.
So related to that, one of the things we're learning or beginning to better understand, and some people are talking it more, is that addiction is a brain disorder. It's not a personal moral issue or a lack of willpower, that failing we were talking about. Can you explain a little bit more about how addiction affects the brain, or why we're beginning to understand it more as a brain disorder?
Yes. And granted, like, I'm not a scientist.
Be a brain scientist.
This is going to be the most rudimentary. I'm going to explain it like I'm five.
Perfect.
Yes. When our region did the Fox Valley chat plunge, they had a doctor come in from the Addiction Society of America. Is that what it is? Or the American Society on Addiction Medicine? Maybe that's at ASAM. And he had made some interesting points that, like, there's a certain, I think he said like 40% of the population has the genetic code for substance use disorder, right? And then like 10% of that, 40%, like something activates it, right? Whether it be a prescription to a painkiller, whether it be a trauma or any other factors, right? And it just turns on. So what that turns on then is that substances, or it could be other kind of process addictions, food or gambling or, you know, video games and stuff like that. Like the brain is basically hijacked to believe like that's what's necessary for survival. And the symptoms of that, what we oftentimes view as the things that makes people bad, is the lying and the manipulating and all these different things that are the same criteria that get someone diagnosed with substance use disorder. So we can't do both things, right? We can't both say like, this is what we don't like, and these are the things that like you are being diagnosed with. And then when you do those things, like we're going to punish you because of it, right? We don't do that with folks with cancer or with diabetes. If someone's diabetic and they have a Snickers bar, we're not like, maybe a weekend in jail will teach you, right? And it's far more in depth than that. Like there's a lot more to understand. And again, like the way that it's woven in with trauma and all these different things, but basically understanding that it is, right? That it's this disease model, and, you know, we have to treat it like we would other medical conditions.
Yeah.
And view it in that sense. Yeah.
I remember you saying once that rather than calling it a relapse, when someone, you know, engages in substance use, to call it a recurrence of symptoms, thinking about it more as symptoms of the medical disorder. And that really helped me start to think about it a little bit differently. A hard fact that we have to face here in Wisconsin is the prevalence of drinking culture. According to the 2023 County Health Rankings, 5 of the 10 drunkest cities in America are in Wisconsin, including Appleton, Wisconsin, as the 6th drunkest city in America. What do you think people in the Fox Valley could be doing to address excessive drinking? And how do we start that conversation? I find it's hard to talk about maybe the downside of our drinking culture.
Yeah, that's been interesting, right? Like living here, like we celebrate, and we're be number one in Appleton at one. I think we've hit number one.
I think Outagamie County was number one for counties one year. Yeah.
And so like it becomes a celebratory thing. And so, but it's celebratory until someone says, like, maybe you have a problem, but then it becomes vilified in a sense, right? You can't handle it. So I think there's a real cultural dynamic of like, what does drinking do in our community. And, you know, we've created like this rites of passage with it. You know, we've made liquor licenses, these invaluable things, you know, and it's not to say like all drinking's bad. It's to say like, well, how are we having this conversation? And I remember the Post Crescent must have been like, I feel like it was like 10 years ago. And it was like these front page articles about like addressing alcoholism in our area. And they got a lot of blowback for it. How dare you, kind of a thing, right? And that just, again, like really spoke to what is our attachment to alcohol? What services are we offering? Can people find help as easily as they can have access to alcohol in a bar, right? And chances are probably not. We're getting there, right?
Mm-hmm. So on that note, we know that there's barriers to getting help, to getting into treatment or to getting recovery services of any kind. Why is that?
So I think there's a number of factors, right? Insurance, accessibility, being able to get into the county, the amount of beds that are available. At one point, we had like 300 some beds, you know, for the entire state of Wisconsin. Is that enough for people to be able to continuously access that? But the other side of that too is like, is everyone with substance misuse or alcohol misuse in need of treatment as well, right? Or is it like, can recovery support services and things like that help? So I think that if we just focus on treatment, what is difficult about getting folks into the bigger, broader, like medicated recovery supports, you know, methadone, Suboxone, other things that are coming out now, you know, that can help people move through withdrawals and things like that. I think, again, like the medical approach needs to be tied in with the community and public health approach. And that's the bigger picture in looking at all these things.
That makes sense. And we haven't talked about it, and I want to make sure we don't miss it. I know peer recovery is a big piece of that. For listeners that might not know, what is peer recovery and how does that fit into those pathways for recovery?
Yeah, in Wisconsin and throughout the region, we have different names and flavors, if you will, for what we call peer recovery support services. And those typically consist of individuals with some type of lived experience, whether it be substance use, mental health, impacted family members, and some approaches even just say like anyone who's been impacted, right, can go through a number of different types of trainings or find different types of certification. And again, it's a non-clinical, non-therapeutic, solely from this support standpoint to walk with someone. And again, the degrees are variable from like you might find a recovery coach or peer specialist in a treatment or in a recovery community organization or in a small nonprofit. Some of them have the availability to like help with rides and funding and housing and have like a really big kind of robust system that they can do. And others are far more limited in their scale. One of the common factors though is again, like they walk with someone. And when I was doing recovery coaching, I mean, a lot of times it was families who were contacting me. We get help from my kid or my loved one. And just to be able to walk with them of what that means and help them set their own recovery plans. Yeah, peer services have become kind of this newer staple in the whole process. So we're like real time watching this new field emerge. So it's going to be around for a while. And I think that it's going to fill in most, a lot of those cracks that we've been trying to address for a long time.
There's one thing that you wish people knew about addiction and recovery. What would it be?
Yeah, just one thing. Wow. So I'm going to say there's one thing for both the person and for the people that know that person. So the one thing for the people that maybe aren't experiencing it, know that people who are experiencing this, you know, it's not personal. So it's not a personal attack on someone. Like we said earlier, like understanding substance use and understanding the varying degrees and the symptoms of it, it's not personal. But oftentimes the reactions come from a personal place because we care and love about that person so much. Try to treat the person like you would with any other medical issue that's going on. Same care and compassion, and love and understanding that anyone else would want to have in a very difficult situation. And again, know that it's not like a person's choice to have that disease or to have that kind of like genetic predisposition. And there's any number of things that turn it on. So just kind of detaching from the idea that it's moral failing or something's wrong with them. And then folks that are struggling, like I really love SAMHSA's definition of recovery. It's a process of change through through which individuals improve their health and wellness and live a self-directed life and strive to reach their full potential. You know, again, there's a lot of cool factors in there about like they improve their health and wellness. They live a self-directed life. So we're not imposing what changes they need to make on them. It's got to be a shared and collaborative. It's like it's a very trauma-informed kind of thing, right? Where there's trust and there's, you know, empowerment, and it's working together to address what a person needs. And knowing that their full potential could be, you know, they were just able to access like, you know, clean needles and syringes for that day. And that's what their full potential was, to be able to stay alive that day. They got Narcan and fentanyl strips that day. They drank less than they did the day before. So looking at all change as recovery, as movement, I think is really important.
Yeah, that's super important. Well, thank you, Jesse, for being at our virtual table for the podcast.
For sure.
We're really lucky to get to talk with you and learn from you and for all that you've done in the community for many years. Listeners, we're going to have links to all the resources that Jesse talked about from SAMHSA, that treatment locator, in the show notes. Thanks again so much, Jesse, for joining us on the podcast. We'll be right back.
As we wrap up this part one of a two-part series, we want to remind you that there are dozens of links to resources in our show notes today for anyone struggling with addiction, and also for loved ones who just want that information. You can visit us at cffoxvalley.org/podcasts and look for this episode titled Hope for Addiction Recovery. And while you're there, we'd love it if you could subscribe to this podcast. We'll see you next time on Voices from the Valley, a podcast of the Community Foundation for the Fox Valley Region.